Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy Saturday morning. Hope all is well wherever you are. I am Dr. Baker, the owner of the only business hospital in the world. And in that instance, my job is to make sure that we are helping businesses every day and that we are making them healthier every single day. And so you have now joined Doctor's Orders, which we talk to different business owners or we take call-ins to assist you with your business, no matter what your ailments or your troubles may be. And so in that instance, if you want to call in and you want to participate on the show at any level or join our conversation, you can do so at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. And from that instance, what we're doing is that we want to make sure that if there's anything that your business has or that your business is doing and you're not sure how to get in front of it, how to make it better, then by all means, that's what we do every single day. And we've got a really great guest today coming in. Actually, we have two of them, and one of them is here with us right now, and the other one will be joining us here in a moment. But I'd like to bring in Dennis Devlin. Mr. Devlin, come on in there. Are you there?
Actually, I'm the other author. I'm Jeff Jones. Dennis is going to be
joining us. Oh, we've got Jeff. Okay, we've got Jeff here. Okay, my apologies. We've got Jeff Jones here. And just so you all know in the audience out there, we have two authors here that are going to talk about their work, what makes their work so important, and we're going to talk about the valuable nature of what they've highlighted in order to bring to you all as an audience. And so we have Jeff here, and we'll be clicking Dennis Devlin here in a moment. So, Jeff, if you don't mind, tell the audience about your work, what inspired you to do the work, and then we'll carry it from there.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I'm really glad to be a part of the show. We've written a book called Three Wise Monkeys, How Clarity, Culture of Clarity Can Create Transformative Success. And Dennis and I have been working together for years and years, both on big brands and on small brands, helping them more fully understand the direction they should take in their business, both strategically and how they communicate. And the biggest problem that we saw and what prompted the book is that we started thinking in terms of it really has an element of a cultural problem within an organization, that organizations aren't crystal clear about understanding their customer and what their customer desires and what we call the job the customer is hiring products to solve. They're unclear sometimes about their competition, and then that results in them communicating very unclearly to the customer in the end. And we believe that you can really get very crystal clear about what a business is supposed to accomplish. It really comes down to three elements working effectively together: an understanding of the customer, an understanding of your competition, and an understanding of yourself. And when you have those, you suddenly see margins getting bigger, you see revenue growing, you start to see your share within your marketplace and your competitive set start to grow. And that's kind of what motivated us to write the business. We just wanted to basically set the standard and scream as loud as we could. We have to be clear. We have to have clear understanding.
You know what? I want to go back a little bit because you're talking about some things that are vitally important to the health of a business. And number one, that is the culture. Yeah. And then how do you set that culture, but then not so much set it as a baseline, but then maintain it, perpetuate it. And so share with us a little bit about what you two have come to find and why you felt it was not just so important to share it, but how effectively can these two things be married between setting it and maintaining it?
Right. Well, I come from, and both Dennis and I come from an advertising background. And I, more than Dennis, I worked in advertising agencies. And one of the things I noticed in one of the agencies I worked in is that while we were committed to doing really getting good insights, doing research, talking to customers, interacting with them, we often found that those that were at the ground level doing the work, sometimes the creative staff, sometimes the strategic staff, weren't as committed to living with the insights that you would get from research. They'd almost see research as an unnecessary evil or restrictive to their creative ability. And so what we first talk about is the idea of how do you first create a, we call it a tribe. How do you create a tribe that is built in a culture of curiosity. And so it really starts with that very first step of hiring the kind of people that are curious. One of the things we suggest is that when you're hiring, you need to look for people that have a broad set of interests. True curiosity isn't something you decide to do one day because you need an answer. True curiosity, you're constantly on the search for something that's new. You're asking yourself, why is the customer doing this? Why did the competition answer a customer need this way? And so it has to do first and foremost with looking for truly curious people and not just hiring based on the fact that they have years of experience in your industry, but the fact that they are truly curious people that are looking for answers to every question they come across. Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense in the world, and there's a strong point that I want to make about that perspective. I do want to introduce to the audience that we have Dennis Devlin in right now. And Dennis, thanks so much for joining the show with your counterpart, Jeff Jones.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And so obviously we're talking about all things culture, all things human capital in the workspace. And so we'll give you an opportunity to chime in as well, Dennis, here as soon as I make this perspective point. But in our climate today, I know that I do roughly 60 to 65 assessments on businesses every single month. And one part that comes out regularly is that it's hard to keep good people. There are no good people. No one wants to work today. But here you are, Jeff, talking about the curiosity in the workplace. Well, how do we band-aid what I like to call a philosophical mismatch in the workplace today with the mentality of work, gig economies becoming really important, matching that with some of the traditional mindsets of going into the workplace and really trying to make your home inside of a company where you can navigate, increase your career, climb the corporate ladder, if you will. How do we branch that? And I'm curious to hear both of your perspectives on that.
Yeah, I have a thought to share in response to that. I think that, Jeff had mentioned just a few moments ago around hiring your tribe, a tribe that's curious. But in the book, we continue to talk about how you can activate that tribe and how you can release that tribe. And what we mean by that is through, in terms of activation, you're talking about promoting, you're talking about onboarding them, you're talking about promoting them, you're talking about giving them training opportunities to do what they could do best. And then with releasing them, now let's give them the budgets and the time in order to do the work in a way that they're empowered to do it. And you just mentioned about the difficulty that businesses are experiencing right now with retaining top talent. We need to rethink work a little bit and how we operate within our companies in allowing our employees to do the work that they were hired to do. We need to empower them in a much greater fashion.
Well, you talk about that empowerment. Is that easy to do, or is that difficult to do in a scenario where maybe what you have to offer is finite? And when I say finite, meaning that the job skill or the job requirement is really just this one thing, and then maybe it's a scenario where you thought you were hiring a tribe based on maybe it was some preliminary questions that you would have had during the interview process, but really getting deep and probing deep into the person to figure out that really their long-term plan is to do something completely outside of the scope of what you're even offering. How do you hedge against that and do a better job from the onset to make sure that you're solidifying that tribe?
Yeah, it's funny. We just Jeff and I just had a conversation about this, I think partly yesterday, about how you need to ask good questions during the interviewing process. You need to get to know your soon-to-be employees that you're hiring. And that's going to take a little bit more of an effort during the hiring process to really understand what are their goals in terms of work. What do they like to really do? Where do they operate the most effectively and efficiently? I think you've got to dig deeper in that process to get the right kind of employee that's going to be a good match for your business and for the work.
Yeah, I think.
If I could tag on. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Devin. Go ahead.
If I could tag on to that, yeah, I think we've slipped into this process of hiring that I call gotcha hiring. It's like, what clever question can I ask to trip up this person that's interviewing with me? And it's almost as if we go in with an adversarial attitude. So we go in thinking, this person is trying to deceive me into hiring them, and I'm going to try to unveil them. We need to think of it more as if we are getting ready to get married and we're dating, and we want this to work out. We want to hire the right person. And even more importantly, we want that person to find a job that's going to be right for them. So rather than thinking about, oh, have they written their resume right? Do they have these three characteristics on their resume correctly? You've got to dig deeper and understand the actual person behind it. And so rather than, I remember going through interview processes where I would be interviewed 5 or 6 times, and every one of those interviews would be exactly the same. So the truth is, they never really dug deep and found out what I'm about. One of the things that we instituted at a company I worked at was we started taking the people that would be interacting with the new person and having them go to dinner together so that we could get a perspective from someone that wouldn't be the person's boss or wouldn't be the person's underling, but would actually be somebody who has to be in the trenches doing the work together. And we found we started to uncover interesting things about people and what motivated them and why they were even looking for this job in the first place.
You know, I want to go into what you mentioned regarding the dinner aspect of it. You're talking about a level of intimacy where you're investing in that individual, because if you were to extrapolate that amongst 20, 30, 40 candidates, now it becomes, you know, I don't want to call it impossible, but it becomes a large undertaking. And so you're talking about once they've met some basic requirements, once they've been filtered through at a level, now if we've got 4 or 5 really good candidates that we believe based on our standard processes, now how do we pull more out of that individual to determine, in fact, if they fit what we have? You know, you always talk about corporate fit or being a tribe, but truly do they do that? I used to be a director of sales at a very large dealership franchise, and we were really good for 7 years, literally the best in a 100-year mark over 4 states. And people say, well, how did you do it? And I told them it was always the people we hired. But one thing that I instituted that almost no one liked is that if you wanted to work there, you had to give us a day. You had to work with us a whole day, and you had to sit there and be a part of what we did. And so there would be times, there would be 5 or 6 people at the dealership all day long with us. And after that, we learned about them, but more importantly, they learned about us. And then we would talk about what could they do in comparison to what they were willing to do, and better conversations came out of that. And I'm not saying that is the approach. I'm just saying that is part of the approach. So what I'm hearing you say is that there's another level of probing, another level of intimacy that you have to have in order to choose the right people, because your company deserves it. Am I hearing that correctly?
See, what you did there is you came up with a creative solution to dig deeper. That's not the only way to do it, and dinner isn't the only way to do it. We have actually pulled people in and had them be part of a brainstorming session, because it showed you know, are they mad when their idea isn't selected? Do they build on other people's ideas? Do they always have to be heard? There's all kinds of creative little things you can do, some that are time-consuming, but some that are less time-consuming, that will give you insights into what it's going to be like to work with this person on a day-to-day basis, and especially whether or not they really have a curious spirit, which just helps you innovate your business and prepares you for the future.
I just want to add that, you know, we're talking about, oh, this might take some time, you know, dinners and such, but the investment that companies make in new employees, if we just take a moment to think about that, it costs a lot of money to train people, to onboard them, to get them acclimated into the company. Losing those people is a big cost to the firm, particularly if it's early on. So, you know, doing some of this due diligence, probing deeper, learning more about who you're hiring, I think can you improve your chances of success in hiring the right person. So it's what, you know, do you want to make some investment up front, or do you want to make a lot of investment that you might lose after the hire?
Well, you talk about that investment. There's a number of ways to categorize that investment. You know, we don't have enough time now, obviously, to discuss those metrics, but just know that those metrics, for any of you employers out there, it's heavy. And if you've been employing people at any given time, not only is it a heavy investment from a financial standpoint to lose people, but how badly does it hurt when you lose someone and you say, man, now we have to start back over, or we have to replace this, or we have to slow down in this one area. From a psychological standpoint, mental strain standpoint, all of that becomes bad. It's easier when you have your team in place and you're able to push that team forward and maintain, you know, your workforce in the way in which it was constituted. Talk to the people a little bit about the book. Once again, remind us the name of the book and then more of the key takeaways, which is why they need to rush right now and go get it.
So it's called Three Wise Monkeys, How a Culture of Clarity Creates Transformative Success. So we're utilizing the Japanese axiom around the three wise monkeys, the hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. And we utilize that as sort of an outline for the book and what we're introducing. So each of the three monkeys represents either the customer, knowing the customer really well, knowing your competition or the marketplace really well, or knowing your brand really well. And I know Jeff mentioned earlier about curiosity. We really feel like curiosity is key in understanding your customer. First, listening very intently, very deeply about what your customer's needs are and their wants, so you're able to better meet those needs and wants. Knowing your competition or your marketplace really requires discovery. This is an even deeper dive, if you will, in really getting a sense for seeing the competition as it really is, knowing your marketplace, being able to identify opportunities for your business. And then thirdly, it's really about knowing your brand and how you're positioning it out there in the marketplace. That really requires honesty, being really truthful about your brand, what your products and services really do for those that they're meant to serve. So the book wraps around those ideas, that clarity really is based on those three items: curiosity, discovery, and honesty. And having all three as sort of leading values in your business will lead to positive results on your bottom line. It can increase your revenue. It can increase your profit margin. It can increase your market share.
Well, I think you talk about, you know, something that's vitally important, which is the curiosity point. And I've always struggled when I'm working with my patients, and I've seen it internationally, where we are listening, or the intent is to listen to your customer until they get seduced by something else and it changes what they think or how they feel or what they desire. And so I'll put some color to that. Let's say technology changes, and all of a sudden they get wind of some new technology that maybe you don't engage in. Now you're forced to work to change your business at some level to match what the industry has now done, because they're now telling you that's what they want. Well, in that instance, when you guys are mentioning curiosity, we actually use the term of imagination in the business hospital world. So we work on four pills, like pills that you swallow. One is information, one is innovation, one is ideation, and the other is imagination. And that imaginative portion of my practice says, they're not thinking about this today. They're not even asking for it today, but they're going to be. And when they do, am I best constituted to provide that for them? Or do I now get mixed and lost in the shuffle and something else lures them away? And you talk about maintaining employees. That happens regularly based on social changes, based on, once again, technological advancement, based on prevailing ideas. All of those things can then find you saying, well, I'm losing people, or we're now not as cohesive as we once were. And that's why I like the fact that you all are talking about curiosity, because what you're now challenging is what we would call metacognition, the science of thinking about what you think about, is that you're now challenging the thoughts of the top management team and or owner.
and say, are you really thinking about what's going to be best for those that you employ? What are some of the tips that you guys have, or even best practices, that will help these business owners retain more of their talent in this current time frame? Does it have everything to do with, you know, inherent internal connectivity? Does it have something to do with tangible benefits? What can you offer our listeners to say, this is really good, or you may want to try this?
Right. I can jump in on this, because one of the things that you're seeing, I believe, in the both the quiet quitting as well as the great resignation, is you're seeing that people have worked at home and they've realized, well, wait a second, I'm empowered when I work at home. I have control of my life when I work at home. And then they're pulled back into the office and everything is supposed to go back exactly the way it was. And they're suddenly finding, well, why don't I become my own boss? Or why don't I do something where I again have control and I'm empowered? So I believe what both the great resignation and the quiet quitting is going to force businesses to do is to say, you know, we've got to hire great people and then we've got to get out of their way. We've got to empower them. Now, very clearly what empowerment means, you can look at research to get a good example of that. If you have to fight within your organization, let's say you're a mid-level person, and you have to fight just to be able to listen to the voice of the customer, that's a very disappointing thing, and you're going to end up looking for an opportunity to go to somewhere else where you can have an impact. So to me, the greatest thing a company can do to retain great employees, this won't work with employees that are trying to get away with something, but with great employees, the best thing you can do is look for every opportunity to empower them that you possibly can.
I think that point is wonderful. I just finished doing a company-wide assessment for a technology company, and you would be shocked at some of the expectations that the employees had. For an example, as I'm doing this, and I'm really trying to determine the culture and the fit of all the employees, and one of the employees tells me, you know, I just feel like they should pay me $130,000 because that's what my parents made. And they meant it. Not because of what they brought to the company. Not because of their experience or their skill set. Just because mom and dad made that, I'm 24, I should make that, and because I'm not making that, they don't listen to me. That was literally their position. Huh. And you said, wow, and that wasn't the only one that was that shocking to me. I couldn't believe they were this transparent in my assessments, but they were. And so I have to now articulate that and interpret that to the owners and say, okay, what kind of cultural issues do we have? Well, in that instance, what you stated was that if you have great employees, meaning that, and I'm going to articulate great as, these people are genuine about their career. They really want to make a difference. Yeah. They care about their skill set. They selected a company because they believed in the right merits of the company. It's very discouraging for that person not to be empowered. But for the person that is looking to get away with something, well, there's almost nothing you can do to please that person, and that person is going to leave anyway. And so how do you build your company with more individuals that we call are great individuals? And I think that has a lot more to do with character, integrity, and these other skills that you just don't find in resumes. Would you guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think there's a big challenge right now for employers. You know, it's been brought out, I think, more now with the pandemic and how so many employees want to work from home, as an example. It's changing the work environment. But I think the they're just more demanding. They have higher expectations of their work experience than they used to have, and so now as a result, I mean, employers have to step up. I mean, I don't think it's going to change now back to what it was. They have to recognize that there's a fundamental shift that's gone on in the workplace and with employees, and their desires from their work experience are much greater than they used to be.
You know, I believe that employers have to do a much better job of setting out the expectation and outlining the culture in a way to where it's undeniably clear. I know that, you know, for me, I specialize a lot of this work, so it's easier for me inside of my business hospital. But even in that, we run into issues. But with that being said, is that at least the issues are now controllable. And you talked about the quiet quitting. You talked about, you know, some of the mass exodus out of companies. And I've seen them. I've had to help these companies get past these areas. And what you find is that if you just think that I'm offering $70,000, you're going to work, you know, Monday to Friday, and we got a benefits package, and you're good, that used to cut it 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. That doesn't get the job done anymore. You know, if you give somebody a week of vacation time, that kind of doesn't cut it either. I mean, we're looking now, and I actually heard this week, is that, well, heck, you know, I can go get 19 at a fast food restaurant. I started scratching my head saying, my goodness, if fast food restaurants are in a bidding war and they're going to pay people $22, $23, $24 an hour to be the cashier, I don't know how any other company survives now, because it's no longer about paying a good wage. It's all these other realities, and it used to be benefits packages, and it's not even that anymore. So we have to be really good about things such as advancement, empowerment, developing skills, on and on and on, to where now you can see the person holistically as opposed to a cog in a wheel. Where can people find Three Wise Monkeys? Where can we find that?
It's both on Amazon and Audible. We do have a website for the book called threewisemonkeysbook.com. There's links to both the Amazon page to purchase the book and also the Audible page to buy the audio version of the book.
Fantastic. Is there an email address in the event that someone has questions, they want to buy them in bulk, anything like that?
Sure, they can direct it to me. It's simply Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at clarity-us.com.
All right, repeat that again to make sure that they wrote that down.
Sure. Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at clarity-us.com.
I think it's really funny, you know, that it's named Three Wise Monkeys, because in some instances it seems like an oxymoron. However, it isn't, because of how we portray monkeys to be. If you ever study their kingdoms and their operations, is that they have a very organized structure. You would be surprised, especially when you look to the animal kingdom, for how some of these things are set up. And if you ever seen a culture quite like monkeys, and I know that you guys selected it for a different reason, but orangutans operate differently than gorillas, and gorillas are different than chimpanzees, and they all have their own culture and how they do things. And so I think it behooves us as business owners to legitimately sit down and say, hey, what is my culture, and can we all say it in our sleep if someone were to ask us? And I find that that's not the case. You ask 10 people, you're going to get 10 answers.
Yeah. Yes, it's funny. I had somebody mention recently that, you know, with this book coming out, that I would be associated with monkeys. I said, well, I'm okay with it because they are wise monkeys.
Hey, you hit them with the semantics and said, did you see the adjective beforehand?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Is what you did. Well, I think you guys' contribution is fantastic in the workplace, especially for a time such as now. You guys are obviously hearing the story, but I'm also confirming your position that I'm hearing the employment stories every single day. And actually, there are horror stories about how to get good talent, how to keep good talent. But if you got someone good, you want to hold on to them, and you don't want to eliminate yourself by having bad, antiquated practices, please include these people into your culture. Make sure that they have a voice in that culture, so therefore you guys can grow together. Once again, we had Dennis Devlin and Jeff Jones here, authors of Three Wise Monkeys. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for taking time to be on the show. Everyone else, I am Dr. Baker. This has been Doctor's Orders. Enjoy your Saturday.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. drbaker.us.
Doctor's Orders, Saturday mornings at 10:30 on WCBG, 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and www.1320thevoice.com.